a special episode of BulaNetwork.com. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio, special episode of BulaNetwork.com. Some of you have asked, how do you do special episodes, and why don't you just number everything? And I will tell you, typically special episodes are ones where something is just provoked, oftentimes, I would say a spur of the moment, but not completely. I mean, I've given it some thought. Not just firing up a microphone and rattling off the top of my head necessarily, but these are things that, at least in my world, are more timely, and hopefully they are for you too. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, from a place that I call the Yellow Studio. Here we are primarily about business. We're about business building, and a big part of it is telling better stories. Now, by telling better stories, I don't mean telling better lies. I mean just making our communication with our prospects and our customers something that's more engaging, something that is more beneficial to them, something that is more impactful for them. And if there is a word that I would use to describe that communication, the word would be empathy. Empathy. Way too many business people, I think, fail at understanding the power of empathy, because they are just like you and me. We're all thinking about ourselves. We're thinking about our own life, and we get wrapped up in what we want. And because we're in business and we want more business and we want more customers, we know what we want. We just too infrequently, I think, do we climb behind the eyes of the consumer, of our prospect, and figure out, well, why should they even pick me? Why should they even choose me? Why should they even listen to me? And these are big questions. Coming out of the retail industry, as I did for many, many years, and running organizations, and retail is notorious for everybody shouting the low price and everybody shouting that our service is better. But, you know, come on, everybody says that. And it's just this sea of mediocrity. It is just this sea of everybody who's trying to do the same thing. We observed very early on when Honda Motor Cars came to America, and when the very first Honda Accord particularly came, the very first Honda Motor Cars were really small. But when the Honda Accord came out, it really changed everything. And that car won so many awards right off the bat. And it became known, I mean, it was really the staple Japanese-made automobile. Toyota and Nissan had been around for some time, but this kind of changed everything. And it wasn't long at all before many other cars hit the road, and guess what they looked like? Yeah, they looked like a Honda Accord. People began to copy it. And that's what happens in the world of business. You see it in professional sports. Here we are. We're on the cusp of the NFL season starting back, and teams are notorious for looking back at the previous Super Bowl winner, and they see how that team was constructed and the focus of that team and maybe the various schemes that that team played, and what do other teams do? Then they try to copy that. People have noted for a long, long time that the NFL is a copycat league. Well, the NFL is not the only one that's a copycat league. Lots of businesses and lots of industries are copycat. They look at the industry leader and they think, well, let's do that too. And over time, what happens is the uniqueness goes away. The uniqueness disappears. And it becomes increasingly, you would think it becomes increasingly, because this is what people tell us, right? Well, it becomes increasingly more difficult to stand out. Now, let's stop and let's think about this for a second. So if everybody's trying to do it the same way, and if everybody's kind of chasing, they're all chasing the same rabbit, and they're all really trying to chase the rabbit the same way, why is it so hard to stand out? It may be that the uniqueness in trying to stand out is not is not in the difficulty of standing out, but it may be in the fact that we don't think standing out is the way to go, because we saw the last guy catch the rabbit and they caught the rabbit doing it this way. We saw the last, you know, Motor Trend car of the year, and it was this Honda Accord circa whatever, 1970, whatever. And we need to build a car like that one. And we need our car to look like that one. I mean, it takes, you know, it takes a lot of brass for a business, whether it's an auto manufacturer or whether it's a local grocery store, to try to do things differently. Because we live in this day and age, and we really have since the late 70s, we've lived in this day and age of benchmarking. We look at the benchmark. In the NFL, the benchmark is last year's Super Bowl winner. Back in the days when the Honda Accord first really rose to prominence, the benchmark was the most popular, the car that sells the most. So every industry has these benchmarks. We're going to chase the leader. I mean, nobody's going to chase the loser. That doesn't make sense. And so we naturally think that by following what that leader does, fully aware that everybody else is doing the exact same thing, fully aware that however many other teams there are in the league or in our industry, guess what they're doing? They're all doing the same thing. And as a result, why should anybody choose you? The subject today is focus. The subject is focusing on the future good that we can do by standing out. What can we do? How can we chase the leader and chase the leader successfully? How can we become the leader, or at least become in the top tier? I'm not going to be a person who's going to tell you that you're going to be world class, and that in order to succeed, you must be world class, that you must be the champion. Yes, in the professional sports leagues, there is one champion. Somebody wins the prize. They win the trophy. They get the rings, and they get world champion ascribed to their team name. And so that naturally means that everybody else loses. In your business, in your industry, that's not how it goes. That's not how it goes. Yes, there may be someone in your industry who is the cream de la cream. They may be considered the world's best. And it probably is going to not be the best. It's probably going to be the biggest. They're the biggest. And it probably is going to be focused on revenue. It might be focused on profit, but I'm wagering it's probably more on revenue. How big are they? What are their sales like? It's one of the first things that business people do when they talk with someone, or when they listen to an interview. The thing that they want to know is, how big are they? What are their revenues like? And the bigger that number, the more successful we tend to think they are. The more world class we tend to think they are. That may not be true. And by the way, the top number can be crazy high, and the bottom number can be crazy low at the same time. That is, you can run a business where the revenues are crazy high, but the money that you keep, that is the net profit, is crazy low. It's possible. And there are lots of businesses that don't have ridiculously high profit margins, but they've got enormous overhead. So that could be one explanation. Incompetent management could be another. I mean, there's lots of reasons for it. And then there can be other people, and the revenues might be reasonably modest, but the majority of that revenue drops to the bottom line, and so it can be incredibly profitable. I don't know what your niche is. I don't know what your industry is. And it really, for this conversation, it really doesn't matter. What matters is that we focus on the things that we need to focus on, because so much of business success hinges on our ability to act with some intent and purpose. There's little doubt that you can find some outliers. There's little doubt that you can point to some people, and you and I could both probably swap stories of people that we know who stumbled onto success. It happens. Do you want to rely on that? Pure chance? Sheer luck? Hoping that serendipity comes your way? Is that going to be your business plot model? Is that your business plan? Not a good plan. It's not a good plan at all. Oh, it can happen, but not likely. So now we come at it from the vantage point of what can we do to give ourselves the best chance? Now, that doesn't mean you're going to succeed. There are no guarantees in it. This whole entrepreneurship movement that we have seen over the last 30 years, and especially the last 20 with the advent of the internet, with everybody who sits at home thinking that they can start some online business simply because we have the World Wide Web at our fingertips at all times, it cons people, it lures people into believing that you too can start something. You can start some enterprise and be successful. It's not so. It's just not so. It's possible, but simply because the World Wide Web consists of billions of people doesn't mean that you're going to be able to launch an enterprise that's going to profit a dollar. There are plenty of people who have attempted things and they've never earned their first dollar, much less the millions that they may have thought they would make. Now, this is not an episode of throwing cold water on your dreams, not at all. Quite the contrary. What I want to do is I want to help you get your mind wrapped around some things that you can do to improve your chances. All you've got to do is look at any statistics of people who start businesses, any kind of business, and see that many of them, maybe even most of them, they don't make it. They don't make it. And there are lots of reasons for that. So this isn't one size fits all, and we can't really paint with a broad brush that, you know, you're going to start a business and the chances are you're not going to make it, because it's very individual. Some people don't put in the work. Some people don't hustle enough. Some people don't know enough. Some people haven't planned or prepared enough. Some people don't know what proper actions to take, and they don't know the order of the actions to take. Some people plan too much. Some people scrutinize too much. They game plan too much, but they don't do enough. But it really boils down, if you want to be real simple-minded about it, and come on, you're listening to the voice of simple-mindedness. He says, tongue firmly in cheek, what we want to do is we want to get customers. And if you don't get customers, you're not going to survive. I don't care how great your widget is. I don't care how fine the food is in the restaurant or the cafe that you open. If you don't get customers, paying customers, you won't make it. You've got to have paying customers, and you've got to continue to get paying customers. So it's about getting customers, and it's about keeping customers. It's about customer loyalty eventually. So with that kind of backdrop here, let's think about our approach and let's think about our focus, because this is a special episode because I've recently had at least a handful of conversations, and it's abundantly clear that there are so many people who are just, they're in love with the notion of a good idea. A good idea. They're not all in love with an idea, but I've encountered countless people, a specific number of people lately, who are in love with the notion of a good idea. If I just had a good idea, if I just had the right idea, fully persuaded that that's the key to it all. The key to business success is I've got to have this great idea. Now, I love good ideas. We all love good ideas. But I got a newsflash for you. That is not going to be the foundation of business success, some grand idea. In fact, most of the business success that I have had and that I have seen in my friends and peers is it's a very small modification of somebody else's idea. In many cases, it wasn't even their own idea. But what it was people that not only knew how to take action, but committed to take action but they were able to take the right action at the right time more often than not. This isn't to say that every act has to be perfect. This isn't to say that we have to have this thing sequenced out with grand perfection, and that if we take a step out of sequence, then we derail our chance for success. Not at all. We're all going to take one step, and sometimes we're going to realize, you know, that was a mistake. That was a mistake. And so you go back and you fix it. It all starts, in my estimation, it all starts with focusing, number one, on the problem, the hurdle, the thing that we must overcome. And every business, whether it's starting out or whether it's an existing business, has got to overcome the challenge of we need customers. I don't care what your challenge is. You probably got some other specific challenges. The challenge, it could be money. The challenge could be, I don't know where I'm going to find the time. The challenge could be, I need some website stuff done, and I don't know how to do it, and I can't afford it done. And there are all kinds of specific challenges that you might have. But the net result of all of those is I need more customers. I need to attract more customers. I need a bigger pool of prospects. And then you get into all these conversations about conversion. Well, let's not get all caught up in all that just yet. I mean, it's true that conversions are important. That is, if we have 100 prospects that are out there, how many can we actually get to pay us and become customers? If we get 2, then our conversion rate is 2%. And in some circles, that can be okay. And in many other circles, that's pathetic. But let's not get caught up in all of that. Let's get caught up in the fact that first we need to attract 100 people that are really potential. If we're attracting 100 people and none of them have any serious interest in the stuff that we are trying to sell, they're not prospects. They're just people. It's just a population of people. And 100 people does not equal 100 prospects. Many, many, many beginning business people get this wrong. They think people are people. No, they're not. Everybody is not created equal, not when it comes to you attracting business. You need to find people that are the people that are prospects. Prospects are defined as people who have the potential to have interest in what you are selling. For instance, your target audience, your target customer may be a certain demographic. Let's say that your demographic, I don't know, let's just pick something. Let's say that your demographic is me. Let's say your demographic is middle-aged males. Well, if you've got 100 teenage girls, that's a population. They're not remotely interested in anything that you've got, but you could say, you know, I have this population of 100. That'd be very different than if you had 100 guys who were all in their mid-50s. Very different. So you need to get focused on overcoming the problem of attracting the very best prospects. People at least who have a high degree of potential to become your customer. Now, this is where I think a lot of people get social media wrong. They just think if I can attract a crowd. So if I could attract a crowd, if I could attract 5,000 people, there's bound to be some percentage of that 5,000 people who are going to be middle-aged guys. Well, that's what we used to call shotgun marketing. Shotgun marketing is where you load the gun with thousands of pellets and you just blast. And the pattern of the blast is so spread out, you just feel like I'm bound to hit my target. Just bound to. This is what traditional media was all about. This is what taking an ad out in the newspaper was like, or radio spots or TV spots. Now, there was some narrowing down of demographics because for instance, if you were in the newspaper, where do you want to be in the newspaper? Do you want to be in main news? That's going to have a certain cost to it. Now, if you're trying to appeal to middle-aged guys, you might think about being in the sports section. You know, where in the paper might middle-aged guys be reading? What TV programs might middle-aged guys be viewing? What radio stations might middle-aged guys be listening to? And so you'd narrow it down somewhat. But even if you narrowed it down, you were still pretty much using the shotgun approach. You were still pretty much just blasting it out there. And it's kind of hope and prayer, kind of marketing. You're really just hoping and praying that the middle-aged guys that you really need, that they hear it and that they'll respond to it. What the internet did, one of the big, big things that the internet did is the internet gave us the ability to really get narrowly focused and to segment and to try to throw our lure out in the water and attract exactly who we wanted to attract, because we could find these pockets, we could find these pools of people. So depending on what we were selling, I mean, let's say that we were selling some health thing, some health supplement, and our target were middle-aged guys. I mean, I'm thinking of all these radio spots that I hear about testosterone therapy and that kind of thing. Well, where might we go online to try to attract those guys? Where are middle-aged guys going online? And so you could begin to think in those kinds of terms and segment it. And now you could fish for middle-aged white guys, to use the fishing metaphor, and you kind of knew where to go. And now, instead of a shotgun approach, you could really take what historically I've just called the sniper approach. I mean, a sniper, if you've watched any of the documentaries about how snipers work, or if you've watched any movies that involved that kind of activity, I mean, there's a lot of waiting around. I mean, it's a lot of recon work. It's a lot of trying to scope out, you know, the target and camouflaging yourself, laying around, taking aim, because you're taking one shot and you want that shot to count. Now, yes, the metaphor, it's a fatality in its final culmination of real being a real sniper. But when we're thinking about marketing, what we're trying to do is we're really putting in the work up front to find who we need to find. We don't care if that shotgun blast happens to hit some of the people that we are trying to attract to sell to, because it's going to hit a lot of other people that they have no interest in us, any more than we have interest in them. So we're really taking a narrow, 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 efficient approach to find who we want to find. Here's the elephant in the room for too many people. Who are you trying to aim at? Now let's take our metaphor. Let's take our shooting metaphor, our shotgun versus a sniper approach, and now think about being a sniper. Who are you on the hunt for? I can't answer that for you. I mean, you're going to have to answer it yourself. Who are you hunting? You're hunting with a rifle. You have a long-range scope, and you've got to put the crosshairs on a specific target. Who is it? That's very different than just saying, well, we're going to look at this population of people, and we're just going to scatter shoot. I mean, that's where the whole notion of scatter shooting comes from. You scatter shoot because you're just kind of keeping your fingers crossed and hoping that you hit somebody that might need what you have to sell. It's a very ineffective way to do it. And so we have to think about this up front. We've got to put this problem up front where it belongs, because if you can't make a sale, nothing else matters. I don't care how great your idea is. I don't care how clever you think you are. I don't care how wonderful you think your customer service is. If you can't get a customer, you can't prove any of that to anybody. I can sit here all day and I can say our service is better than anybody's. Our food is better than anybody's. Our prices are better, lower than anybody's. But if nobody puts me to the test, I can't prove it to anybody. It's just me spitting in the wind. It's me spewing forth to the world how great and how wonderful I am. So I'm challenging you to get focused up front on the thing that matters most, and that is who you're aiming for. Because here's the real question that it's answering. Why should anybody buy from you? What makes you so special? Maybe you're not special. And if you're not special, good luck. Good luck. I mean, being in the field of mediocrity, which is where most people are, is a tough road to hoe. Now, there are lots of people. There are lots of businesses. You can get in your car right now. I don't care where you live. You can get in your car. If you're in any size community at all, you can get in your car and drive down and go to the nearest strip center, some little strip shopping center. And I promise you, there is an independent business in there somewhere. And they've got themselves probably not a very good job. You've probably got an owner, maybe an owner and his wife. They may be mortgaged to their hilt. The stress level is high. The bills are mounting. They're struggling to hang on. And they could go get a job making twice as much money. It's just the reality. It's the reality of small business. You know, it's the side that people don't want to tell you about. It's the side that people don't want to talk about. Because everybody wants you to believe that it's just easy. You just start it. You come up with a great idea and just work like crazy and it'll happen for you. The odds aren't that it will happen for you. The odds are that you will fail. I mean, I'm sorry, but they just are. I'm just trying to give you the best possible potential to not fail. And this is some of the stuff that you've got to do up front or you will fail. And I don't want to see you fail. And I certainly don't want to see you fail in grand fashion because so many people do. I haven't done a lot of research on it. I did some years ago. I did some research, especially on small store owners. And the numbers at the time, and this has been probably 10 years ago, so they're very dated, but I'd suspect they haven't changed all that much. I mean, the numbers were just crazy. People that were working for well below minimum wage, but they could say, hey, I'm a business owner. I just don't think that's what you want. I hope that's not what you want. I hope that you haven't been so jaded by all the garbage that's being spewed out in the internet about being a business owner to believe that being employed is just, it's just there. Other than death, nothing's worse because it's a lie. It's just an absolute lie. You know, we read these magazine articles and they talk about how many people are unhappy with their job. Well, listen, there are magazine articles that talk about how people are unhappy with their marriage too. So, does that mean you got to be unhappy in your marriage? No. You know why a lot of people are unhappy in their marriage? Because a lot of people are self-centered. A lot of people are self-focused. A lot of people don't do the work. A lot of people just don't do the work that's required to have a good marriage, period. That's why their marriage is awful. Same thing goes for any other activity of life, any other endeavor. You know why people fail? In many ways, in many cases, they fail because they don't put in the work. And in some cases, yes, people give up too soon, but in other cases, people just, they don't have their mind right. They don't have their mind right. And the more we hear all these grandiose stories, many of which, by the way, are completely false, totally fabricated, there's so much lying that goes on in the world. And especially now with the internet, we believe people too easily. Now, I'm not saying be paranoid, but yeah, you need to be a little bit skeptical. You even need to be a little bit cynical. Maybe I'm too much that way, admittedly, but I'm really optimistic. I'm really optimistic in your chances of starting some side project or even starting something that may eventually turn into some full-time something, but I'm more optimistic for those of you that have started something, you've done it for a while, you just can't seem to break away from the current plateau. You've been on this plateau maybe year after year, and you just can't seem to escape the gravity pull that is this current plateau. as some people say, you can't get to the next level, whatever the next level is, and however you would define that. And there are lots of you in that situation. More often than not, it gets down to customer acquisition and customer retention. So if you get nothing else from this diatribe so far, get that. Customer acquisition and customer retention. Because once you get beyond those, my question to you is, what else matters? What else matters? Getting customers and keeping customers. Is there anything else that matters? No, there isn't. Nothing else matters. So we need to put our focus and attention on that. Now, granted, that opens up Pandora's box for a litany of other things that we've got to consider and wrestle with. How? How are we going to get new customers? Well, I don't know what you're offering. I don't know who the target is that you're aiming for. I know this. There's so many people that they're running around with a sawed-off shotgun. You know why they saw the shotgun barrel short, don't you? A much wider blast. The shorter the barrel, the wider the dispersion of all that shotgun, those shotgun pellets. Well, so many of us want to go into market, and that's how we want to market. We want to market with a sawed-off shotgun. The problem is we're living in a world where snipers are kings. The people who can really think about and get their scope and pan the horizon, and they see their target and instantly recognize, that's my target, that's who I'm after, to the exclusion of all the others. There's the rub. Man, there's the rub. I don't want to exclude anybody. I want to sell to everybody. You can't succeed selling to everybody. Everybody can't be your market. You can't be unique to everybody. You can be unique to some. You can be attractive to some. In order to be attractive to some, you must be completely ignored by others. So let's flip that on its head. Who do I want to aim at means I also have to be able to quantify who I don't want. You've seen these shooting training things. I've seen them on TV, you know, whether it's a TV show or whether it's some real live thing, where they will take military people or police people and they'll walk them through, you know, this range or this target. I'm thinking of the scene, was it Dirty Harry? One of the Dirty Harry movies, you know, they had this simulation, this training thing, and a good guy would pop up and you had to instantly recognize, okay, no, don't shoot him. A bad guy would pop up and you wanted to shoot him, and the quicker the better. You know what I'm talking about. You've seen those things. Well, that's how our marketing has to be. Somebody pops up and comes onto our radar and we must instantly know, nope, not my guy. Somebody else comes into view, bam, that's exactly who I want. That's who I want right there. Now, in order to pick one, you have to necessarily not pick the other one. It's tough. I'm not telling you it's easy. I'm just telling you that this is a challenge. This is the challenge that seasoned business people have. It's absolutely the challenge that novice business people have. Who do I want to buy my stuff? Who will most benefit by buying my stuff? Who do I want to do business with? I mean, there's another one. Who do I want to spend my time serving? It's a huge component. I have to know who I want to get in the crosshairs of my marketing message. And that means I must, as I pan, I got to say, nope, nope, yeah, yeah, right there. That's the guy. Who is that for you? You know what I'm betting? I'm betting you haven't thought that deeply about it. I'm betting that you're struggling a little bit because you'd like to sell everybody. Well, yeah, we would all like to sell everybody. We'd all like to invent, you know, the next fork. Not going to happen. We all want to think in grand numbers. And you know why? You've been watching Shark Tank too much. You've been listening to too many blog posts and podcasts perhaps about VC money and going public. You've been reading too much about dreaming big, dream big, dream global, shoot, dream international. International, we don't want to be just national. We want to be global. Well, that's all great and wonderful. And I'm not saying that you can't do that. But I'm saying most of us can't. Most of us don't. Most of us can make a fine living. We can find work that we're good at. We can serve people that otherwise might go unserved because of the uniqueness of what we can do and the uniqueness of how we can do it. And yeah, it might make all the difference in the world for them and for us. But we got to know what we're doing, and we got to get focused on forward progress. And it's not wrapped up in some grandiose idea, some novel idea that nobody's ever thought of before. That's not where most business success is found. I know we all love to read stories of Apple and other high-tech people that are doing crazy, insanely wonderful things. And some of you've got that ability. I don't. And maybe a big part of this is coming to the realization of who we are and what we are before we have to face the reality of who are we going to serve? Who do we want to serve? It's the heavy stuff that goes on in your head that has to go on in your head before you can really make something happen. There's so many people that are involved in sales, and the reason that they can take off and they can succeed is because they're able to sell somebody. And I don't mean that in a negative sense. I don't mean that in a manipulative sense. I just mean if they've got some sales DNA, they know that age-old adage that nothing happens until something is sold. And so they get busy selling. And they worry about all the other stuff later. It's partly how sales guys are wired. I know, because I've spent my life doing that. You know, sales guys typically aren't great at paperwork and some of the other details because, right, they're too busy selling. Too busy selling. Isn't it funny how so many businesses, it doesn't matter what the business is, but if the person, male or female, if they've got any propensity at all to sell or to hustle, boy, the odds just seem to skyrocket, don't they? There's a reason for that, you know, because it's all about customer acquisition and customer retention. And that takes, well, the first one takes sales. Second one takes a bit more than that, but it's all selling. So if you need to learn a skill, man, I'm going to tell you, focus on selling. Focus on selling. And if what you've got is not selling, then change the offer. Tweak it. Find something else. But it really boils down to the word that I used at the outset here, and that word is empathy. You really have got to empathize with the people that you're trying to help. Why are you trying to help them? What is it that you're doing that nobody else can do? What is it you're doing that nobody else will do? How is it that you're doing it differently? And you've got to be really compelling in how you convey that, how you communicate that. And that's why the storytelling is so important. That's why the metaphors that you use are important. That's why the communication is important. Because it's a big deal. Your business hinges on getting customers and keeping customers. Okay, one call to action. Subscribe now. There's a button at the website. Just go to BulaNetwork.com and you'll see the button that says subscribe now. Hit that button, enter your email address, and you're done. Yeah, you're done. Special stuff will be coming your way. I appreciate you listening. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is BulaNetwork.com. This has been a special episode from inside the Yellow Studio.